Welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. And in his landmark book almost 40 years ago, he gave an unprecedented look into life in the clubhouse. So when there was outrage with Torrey over his book, our guest was amused. In that same book, he disclosed that some players didn't go out on the field alone, that they had help. Thus, the notion of illegal substances to enhance performance is nothing new. Here with us is the author of Ball 4, Jim Boughton. Jim, good morning. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ed. Nice to be back.
I can't believe it's going to be 40 years next year. Did Torrey's book violate the sanctity of the clubhouse, particularly with his criticism of Alex and Pavano?
Oh, it probably did. But, you know, the clubhouse needs to be violated. And so does Congress and the back rooms and all those interesting places where people really want to know how things work. So we're not, you know, losing any state secrets there. You know, there's nothing going on that people can't know about. It's just silliness. As a matter of fact, when you think about it, all of this sanctity of the clubhouse business may be a marketing gimmick where Major League Baseball helps certain revered players and managers to sell books. We'll get all outraged over hardly anything, and, you know, good luck to you.
You said recently it's almost 40 years later, and why in the world anyone is still talking about the sanctity of the clubhouse is beyond me.
Yeah, not only that, but, I mean, here's Joe, a revered character, as opposed to me when I wrote Ball 4. I was a washed-up pitcher as far as anybody was concerned. And so what right did I have to write a book? But Joe Torrey, he certainly has the right, and so he does. And but he doesn't say anything that people didn't already know. There's no shocking revolutions here. So
revelations.
Revelations. And so she's not saying anything shocking and nothing that nobody's heard before. And so I don't understand what the whole big thing is, unless it's part of the marketing plan.
But I think that a lot of people were surprised, Jim, that for a guy who spent so much time trying to keep anything from leaking out of the locker room, and it's so hard to do so, that yet this came out in a book.
You know, here again, there's hardly what's leaking. What leaked out of the locker room here that David Wells is a bit of a an oddball, that Rodriguez doesn't quite fit in with his teammates. I mean, how is that a leak? Didn't we know that already?
We did, but I think the fact that we heard things like A fraud for the first time, and that the teammates allegedly, really did not like Carl Pavano. We didn't hear about
like
that.
Carl Pavano. I don't even know the guy. But here again, it's just not—it's not big enough news. You mentioned something early on that I wanted to get to in your introduction, talking about performance enhancing.
And I was just going to get to that, yeah, because in your book we learned for the first time really about greenies in 1970.
Right, and also, but let me say something about greenies. First of all, greenies were not performance enhancers. They at the best, they allowed a guy with a hangover or somebody who didn't get any sleep that night to be more alert, and he was able to play up to his normal ability. So they were performance enablers. They were not performance enhancers. They did not make him a better player than he ordinarily would. That's the difference between amphetamines and these human growth hormones and steroids. I'm not saying that's okay. I think there should be a ban on amphetamines too, because they're not healthy. But they have to be put into a different category, than the human growth hormones. They're probably something a little bit better than a cup of coffee in terms of the stimulation that you get. So I think you need to baseball needs to make a distinction there.
What, if any, performance enhancers do you think were available at the time you wrote the book, or when you were a kid coming up with the Yankees?
There were no performance enhancers that anybody knew about. But one of the things that I said in Ball 4 that I think baseball should have done something about, besides the amphetamines, I told the story of how Whitey Ford at the end of his career, came into the locker room one day, and he had a bottle of white liquid, Whitey lockered right next to me. And
milk?
No, it was. I'm sorry, clear liquid.
Oh.
It was clear liquid, and I said, "What do you got there?" He says, "I got some DMSO, dimethyl sulfoxide. It reduces inflammation in horses. I got it from a friend at a trotters track. Whitey was interested in the trotters." And I said, "Hey, wait, slap a little bat on my shoulder. My arm's bothering me too." So here we were, no chemist, no trainer, no doctor, no supervision,
no guidance,
nothing at all. Reaching into this jar and spreading stuff on our bodies, and I know it was powerful because the minute it touched my shoulder, I could taste it in my mouth. I mean, you know, quickly it went through my system. And I remarked, I said, "You know, players will take anything. They'll risk their lives." I said, "If there was a pill that would guarantee a pitcher would win 20 games but might take 5 years off his life," I said, "we'd take it." The point there is that professional athletes will do anything. They will take anything. And not to cheat. We weren't interested in cheating. We just wanted to be able to pitch up to our abilities. But in any case, players will take dangerous substances. They need to be protected against their competitive instinct. That's why the owners and the Players Association have to protect the players by making very, very tough rules against any dangerous drugs.
Do you think they have?
No, they haven't done that. The only way to do that is to first of all, they need to take blood tests and hold on to them, so that and those blood tests will be used in the future to double check and make sure that they've stayed clean throughout their careers. Blood tests every year, and that's the only way you can stay ahead of the chemists who are going to be continually trying to create drugs that are not detectable. And at some point they'll come up with ways to detect those drugs, but they can't wait until that happens. And so by having these blood tests, if what's in your blood is held against you for the rest of your career, you're going to be very reluctant to take any kind of drugs, even if it can't be detected at that time. So that's what they need to do.
Jim Boughton with us on the 39th anniversary of Ball 4, his landmark book, where he talked about performance enablers in the book, Greenies, and we're also talking about his reaction to the Joe Torre book. Given what you said just a moment ago, that if players could enhance their performance, even if it meant taking 5 years off their life, they would do so. I've heard and talked to guys from this generation of players that we so love, your generation, and who have said to me, "Jim, if steroids or things like it were available at that time, I can't stand here in all honesty and say I wouldn't have used it." And that goes to the point that you just made.
That's right. If Whitey Ford and I can slap DMSO on our shoulders without any supervision, I mean, what's the next step? That could have been an illegal drug. And as a matter of fact, it may have been an illegal drug as far as using it on human beings were concerned.
Did it help you when you went out?
No. Didn't do anything. I tried an amphetamine one time just because I wanted to see what the whole thing was. And I was so juiced. I was so jangled. I couldn't get the ball over the plate. And I realized after that game, I said, "Boy, I'm never going to do that again. I'm already alert enough. I don't need any help there."
What about this, which has been talked about since the revelations with Alex in the past week, with regard to it's cheating. There's a line, and he violated that line. But did not Gaylord Perry, when you were playing, do the same thing with his little opera out on the mound? And we laughed back then and continued to. We thought it was cute when he would drive Bobby Mercer nuts at the plate. And yet he was allowed to continue, even despite all of these rumors that he was cheating. And now he's in the Hall of Fame.
Okay. To me, that's a different form of cheating also. It is not in the same category as changing the physical characteristics of your body. There has always been an unwritten rule that if you could get away with doctoring the ball, spitting on it, scuffing it, if you were clever enough to do that in front of 50,000 people and guys and four umpires and a dugout full of guys, then you were allowed to get away with it. But also, it was something that you knew Gaylord Perry was doing, So, and you knew how to counteract it. There are ways to hit a spitball or to deal with a spitball, and so it was something that people, you know, players could adjust to it. You can't adjust to somebody secretly taking something that makes them stronger or bigger or faster. You can't do anything about that. You can't adjust your batting stance. You can't adjust your style of play.
Ron Darling was on a moment ago and seems to think, as confidently as one can be, Jim, that the players are as clean as they have been in recent history, and we're not, in fact, watching wrestling. Do you feel that way?
I think, you know, you can see in wrestling that guys are just all out of proportion, and as a matter of fact, there comes a point where you reach diminishing returns, where the bigger and bulkier you get, you know, the more, you know, the less flexibility you have, and so it becomes counterproductive. So I think there's a limit to how much, you know, stuff you can take before it starts to work against you. But in any case, shouldn't have any kind of help or anything that changes your body chemically, changes the chemical composition of your body.
Jim, thank you so much for being with us and contributing this morning. Great to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you. Jim Boughton for us, the author, of course, of Ball 4.